The South Akron Youth Mentorship is exactly what the name implies. These folks mentor the youth of Akron, Ohio. If you would like to volunteer or perhaps help with a charitable donation, please visit saymentor.org and find out how you can help out today. That's saymentor.org.
Welcome to the Phil Nasons Show.
Welcome to the Phil Nason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We'll be here for the entire hour, and we'll talk fantasy baseball today. We'll also replay a couple of segments of NBA All-Stars, because I think that's very relevant today and to the conversations we're going to be having next week. We'll also talk some New York Mets baseball, but up first, the Oakland A's. Well, they sort of have a brand. Actually, the outfield looks pretty familiar, and we're going to talk about them. We have an injury to report. And here to do just that, from AthleticsNation.com, Alex Hall is in the house. Alex, welcome to the show.
Spring training hasn't even started yet, but the injuries have already begun.
Yeah, they sure have, haven't they? Sean Doolittle, what a bummer. He has a issue with his rotator cuff, and he will not be there opening day, most likely. But it makes that Tyler Clipper trade all the more beneficial, I guess.
Sure. With all the, well, most of the big all-stars gone from the team now, Doolittle is kind of one of the last remaining stars. He's become one of the faces of the team now. In fact, he is the representative for the very silly Face of MLB competition that has just started up again this year. He just beat Jose Altuve in the first round. But that's irrelevant to the play on the field, which is what we care about here. And it looks like he is going to miss the very beginning of the season. You know, a rotator cuff is it's not unheard of. That's something that happens to a pitcher. A really serious rotator cuff problem can be a big deal. It sounds like this right now is a minor version of that problem, and that the hope is he'll come back and pitch, you know, most of the season just fine. But we'll just have to wait and see. And as you said, it's nice that the A's already kind of have a backup plan, having just acquired Tyler Clippard. And so even if you do lose Doolittle for an extended period of time, you have another all-star caliber reliever who does have some closing experience. Clippert has served as a closer for the Nationals before he's even got a 30-save season under his belt. And at the very worst, he should be a totally competent, you know, fill-in closer, if not a fantastic one. So it's a bummer of an injury to have, you know, one of your big star players, knowing already he's going to miss the beginning of the year. But as far as having a good replacement, hey, it could be a lot worse.
It could be. And, you know, Eric O'Flaherty can probably come in and close too. And we all know that Bob Melvin loves to do the closer by committee. So it could be fun. It could be interesting. So stay tuned to this show and Athletics Nation for more updates, because I know a lot of you fantasy people are starting to think about closers and this and that. It should be interesting. But the outfield, Alex, I've already decided that I'm going to trade Josh Reddick and Coco Crisp because I want the whole outfield to be new. But that's after this opening day, because my opening day outfield is Josh Reddick, Coco Crisp, and Sam Fold. That's who I have out there.
Yeah, you know, that's one good guess among many. There's a lot of arrangements that the A's can have in this outfield now. The suspects are mostly the same. Like you said, Josh Reddick is still there for right field. You still have Coco Crisp, as well as Craig Gentry, a couple of guys who play a good center field. And Sam Fold is still around from last year as well. There's also a couple of new names in the mix. One of them, of course, is Ben Zobrist, who we've already talked about. Well, he's mostly an infielder, you know, who plays a lot of second base, but he's also a good defender in left and right. And so, given Melvin's preference to move guys around, mix and match, it's entirely possible you could see Zobrist playing a lot of left field to get another good bat out there, just depending on what happens in the middle infield, especially if the A's go after this Cuban guy, Oliveira. You know, we still don't know if the A's might bring in that extra infielder, and if they do, then you'll definitely see Zobrist getting a lot of time in the outfield. From a fantasy perspective, of course, he'll play enough at a bunch of positions to qualify, I'm sure, a lot of different places. But, you know, don't be surprised if you see Zobrist getting the bulk of the time out there, just, you know, depending on how the roster looks at the beginning of the season. There's also another name out there to look for, And his name is Mark Canha. And we're not really sure. I'm not even sure if I said it right because we've never seen him play before. We don't know what to expect from him. He is a Rule 5 draft pick. And if you're not familiar with that term, you might think back to Nate Freiman a couple of years ago. It's a way of acquiring a player by which you're drafting him from another team, a guy who kind of never got a chance with another team. But the rule is you have to keep him on your 25-man roster all year long. And if you don't, you try to send him down, you have to send him back to his old team, or at least offer him back. So the point is you're taking sort of a guy who never made it in that other organization, and you're giving him a guaranteed chance in your organization because you think he's ready for the majors now. And so the A's have picked up this guy, Canha, and he's a right-handed power hitter, very similar actually to Nate Freiman in what they hope to do with him, which is hopefully use him as a right-handed power bat against left-handed pitching. Looks like he can play left field, first base, and maybe even fake it at third. So he's another guy that you could see move around the diamond. But it sounds like maybe first and or left field are the places you're most likely to see him. And so that adds another wrinkle into the outfield situation. Do you want maybe a little more power out there against a left-handed pitcher? You can stick this guy in left field. That could work out. We don't know if he will actually pan out as a major league hitter or not, but the A's went awfully far out of their way to pick this guy up, knowing the limitations and knowing that he had to stay on the roster all year. So you have to figure he's at least going to get a shot in April to prove that he can hit in the majors.
And if Mark Canha pays off, that's going to open up a world of possibilities for another trade, especially at the deadline, depending on what they need. And that's a fantastic move. Josh Reddick, I love Josh Reddick's defense. Remember those two catches? I think we talked about this before as our highlights from last year. Those two catches in spring training were off the charts. They were incredible. How much are we going to see him out in right field, though?
I would love to keep seeing him every day. You know, I got a good feeling about him this year. I think we're going to see not the 2012 breakout we saw out of him. When he hit 32 home runs, I don't think you're ever going to see that again. That was just everything coming together perfectly and him sneaking up on the league. And now they've had the chance to adjust to him. Well, he got quite a bit worse after that, but I still blame a lot of that on the bad wrist injury he suffered in early 2013. I don't think he ever really truly recovered from that until the second half of last year, because you saw his hitting start to take off again. You start to see a little bit of the guy that you saw in 2012, maybe. He ended up being one of the best hitters on the A's in the second half of the season. You know, when everything else was falling apart, Reddick was one of the guys hitting well. And so, I look and I think, hey, could this guy maybe even back out and maybe hit 20 homers, you know, hit 260, 20 homers, you know, enough walks to get the on-base percentage up over 300. You know, he's a guy who, with the kind of defense he plays in right, if he's even a little bit above average at the plate, he's an extremely valuable player. And so, yeah, I'd like to see him out in right field every day. Maybe he sits against a tough left-handed pitcher now and then, but for the most part, I think, you know, he's going to do enough on both sides of the ball to be worth having in there every day. As for the rest of the positions, you know, Coco is such a good player. We all love him. We all want to be in there. We don't know what to expect from him after the neck injury he had last year. If he comes back like his old self, then absolutely get him in that lineup for 140 games as much as you can. But, you know, if the bat is a half step down, he's not a very good defender in center field anymore. Well, he might at least be average, but he's definitely slowed down from what he used to be. And it's at the point where Craig Gentry is absolutely undeniably the superior defender in center field. He might have an argument for being the best defensive center fielder in all of baseball. And so you're starting to wonder, does the balance of playing time start to shift over from Coco in center a little bit to Gentry? Do you see Gentry getting more and more starts in center to take advantage of that glove? Or is Coco going to hit enough to make up the difference and keep himself in the lineup every day? So it's another unknown going into the year, not knowing what we're going to get out of Coco. And then again, that left field could be any one of four or five guys getting a lot of time there.
Okay, we got 30 seconds, Alex. Which outfielder gets traded first?
Fold.
Okay.
I mean, if anyone was going to go, I would imagine, you know, he's the one that has the most tenuous grip on the roster. If they were to pick up a new guy, you know, a new power hitter or something like that, he'd probably be the odd man out because he's very similar in style to Coco and Gentry as the, you know, more light hitting speedster. But both those guys play a better center field than he does. And so I would have to think he'd be the odd man out. But I don't think any of these guys get sold right now in any kind of sell high move, because Coco and Gentry were hurt a lot last year. Reddick is still, I think, rebuilding that value. I don't think it's the right time to trade him yet. You got to let him hit his way back up. I don't see a reason to trade the other guys. So the only reason one would go is if Fold got forced out.
Okay, I'm going to go with Josh Reddick because I think he has the biggest upside and he can bring in the biggest haul.
I think he has a breakout year and they trade him next winter. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, that's fair enough. That was Alex Hall, man. Thanks for being on the show, dude.
Hey, thanks a lot, Phil.
All right, that was Alex Hall. You can catch him over at athleticsnation.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. The West Coast All-Stars of the National Basketball Association have been voted for and selected, and there's a whole bunch more to be talked about. And joining me to do just that, from GrizzlyBearBlues.com, and another big reason why this show was nominated for Podcast of the Year, please welcome Joe Mullinax to the show. Joe, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
That was a wonderful introduction, Phil. I appreciate that. It's nice to feel like I could possibly be a part of, a small part, but a part still, of the Podcast of the Year. I feel honored. I think I owe you a great deal of gratitude, sir. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
My pleasure. That's right. We're going to be the Podcast of the Year, and that's all that matters.
We still have
a couple more days to nominate me. The nomination process, I've been blowing that horn all week, but still, it's a great show because of the guests, and I've always said that. I've always maintained that, and I just play quarterback, and I think we do a good job, all of us. But this NBA All-Star team, here's who we have as the starters for the Western Conference. Steph Curry and Kobe Bryant in the backcourt. Marc Gasol, Anthony Davis, and Blake Griffin. Now, this is all done on Sunday. You know, we're just talking about this as a topic, but these were the five that were selected. Now, Kobe Bryant's probably not going to be there. Do you agree with the starting five?
Yes, I do, outside of Kobe Bryant. And like you said, unfortunately for Kobe, that probably will take care of itself. I would bet that Kobe will still go to the game, but he won't play for sure because of his torn rotator cuff. You would think that he's done for the season, especially the Lakers don't necessarily have anything to play for. So I would think that spot will be filled by either Klay Thompson or James Harden, two guys who aren't on the team yet, but are almost assuredly going to be reserves. Steph Curry is having an MVP caliber season. Anthony Davis is as well. He's just playing for a team that's still struggling to get over the hump in the tough Western Conference in the New Orleans Pelicans. So I think Davis deserves to be there. You could argue he is one of the top players in the NBA at this point. Blake Griffin, popularity-wise, he'll always hang around. And then also, he's having a good season. The Clippers are still hanging around in the West. And then Marc Gasol, as a Memphis Grizzlies blogger, podcaster, all of the above, it's wonderful to see how the Grizzlies, as an organization, have grown to the point where it's not just in Memphis that people are appreciating what Marc Gasol is. And at this point, to me, he's the best center in the NBA, period. So it really is great to see that, you know, Marc Gasol beat Blake Griffin out in voting. He was the second leader behind Anthony Davis in that front court selection process. So Marc Gasol being there, you know, that's a source of pride for the Memphis Grizzlies fan base. And it's really great to see him being acknowledged for what he is, one of the top players in the NBA.
Yeah, I'm with you on Marc Gasol. I'm with you on Kobe Bryant. I wouldn't have put Kobe Bryant in there. I did not vote for him.
No, I wouldn't have put him in there either. I think I would have gone with James Harden. He's having a remarkable season. But Kobe, again, part of this process is it's fan voting. You want the fans involved, or at least the NBA does. And Kobe Bryant's a name. I mean, you know, Carmelo Anthony for the Eastern Conference. You could argue he shouldn't be on that All-Star team, but he's a name. And that's just how it's going to be when it comes to the starters. Hopefully the reserves make up for it a little bit, those being selected by the coaches.
I'm going to argue the thing in a little while. Actually, next segment with Chris Willis, we're going to talk about the East Coast All-Stars. And you know what, though? I don't think that he should be there. I'm glad that Marc Gasol's there. As you know, I have my 1-1A teams in the West, that would be the Portland Trail Blazers and Memphis Grizzlies, as you've known for a long time. I'm very happy that Gasol's there. I would not have selected Blake Griffin, even though he jumped over a Kia a couple years ago, and he can dunk like the daylights. I would have put LaMarcus Aldridge in there instead of him. I think LaMarcus had a better year. I think Boogie Cousins has had a better year than Mr. Griffin. And I think Tim Duncan has had a better year than Mr. Griffin. But it is what it is, and the fans do have a say in this thing. You know, last year I did this show, and I mocked the process. This year I'm serious about it, and I wouldn't have selected him, but I can see why they did. And I don't have a problem with that. Who else? Who do you think got snubbed, though? I've named a few guys I think got snubbed. Who else? Who do you think got snubbed by the fans?
Well, the guys that you just named are pretty good ones. Obviously, LaMarcus Aldridge, part of his issue, and it'll be interesting to see if it affects the voting for the reserves. People thought he was going to be out for almost 2 months just a few days ago, and now he's back, and he looked phenomenal against the Wizards in a big game in D.C. the other night. So it really is interesting to see how the LaMarcus Aldridge situation will play out. I think Tim Duncan's a guy that you'll see on that team for sure. I think Boogie Cousins certainly deserves an appearance. He, especially at the beginning of the season, was lights out, dominant in the Western Conference. I think you'll see Chris Paul on that roster. I'm not sure you can argue he was snubbed, but I think he'll be there. And then also you got to remember, you know, the reigning MVP, Kevin Durant. Obviously injury pushed him aside a little bit, but you can always argue for Durant. I mean, the injuries that Durant dealt with, you know, Carmelo Anthony has sat out multiple games too in the East. So the fact that Kevin Durant was not elected to the All-Star roster starters is surprising. But I think he'll be on the team for sure, Kevin Durant, as an All-Star. But the fact he isn't starting to me was a bit surprising.
That didn't surprise me at all. I don't think he's as popular as these other guys. I don't think he's had as good a year as these other guys. I think the injury has something to do with it. But still, I don't know what the deal is. Maybe the fans just don't take to him because he's just not thuggish enough. Maybe he needs to go out there and commit a crime to get some street cred. I don't know. But you know some names that I think got snubbed? Damian Lillard is another one I think got snubbed. I think he's had a phenomenal year. You mentioned James Harden. I think you're right. What about Chris Paul? Do you think he got snubbed?
As a starter, I mean, and again, you look at just comparing it to the East, obviously two point guards will be starting in the East, Kyle Lowry and John Wall. I think that you could argue that a point guard like a Lillard or a Paul got snubbed a little bit. Kobe Bryant getting those votes probably takes up some space for them. Klay Thompson is another one who you could probably make an argument for. And obviously that's really fresh in a lot of people's minds because of the amazing quarter that he had recently where he just scored 37 points in a quarter. He was just red hot, could not be stopped. There's a lot of names that you could, you know, they're kind of floating in the starter argument. I think the only really solid ones that you kind of knew were going to be starters would be the guys like Anthony Davis, who's popular, and you watch him play and he's, you know, head and shoulders above a lot of the folks that he plays because of his athleticism and his position. And then Steph Curry. Steph Curry is really having a remarkable year. But outside of that, you know, I personally am a little bit biased towards Marc Gasol, but you could possibly use the same argument, you know, you did it for Blake Griffin, for Marc Gasol. You know, could a LaMarcus Aldridge have filled in that spot? Possibly. I don't think so, but you can make the argument. So there's just so many players, you know, maybe below Steph Curry and below the Anthony Davis type of athleticism and explosiveness that could maybe be interchangeable on that Western Conference All-Star team. And I think that just kind of speaks to the difference in talent between the West and the East. You look at the possible Eastern Conference folks that'll be reserved compared to the West, and I just don't necessarily think it's a contest personally. So it really is a testament to how deep the Western Conference truly is.
I agree with you. I think the East are going to put up a bigger battle than you think, though. But they have great players. They just have lousy teams. But, man, this is a crazy thing. What about Russell Westbrook? He got snubbed, I think, a little bit, too. The fans just don't show the Thunder players any love, do they?
Not really. No, they don't. And it has to do with that small market kind of philosophy. But I also think in those two particular cases, the injuries affected them. I really do believe that. I can't imagine Kevin Durant not being a starter on the Western Conference All-Stars if he had been healthy the entire season. And Russell Westbrook maybe a little bit less, but he's another tremendous talent. Those are two guys that, you know, I would think Durant will be on there before Westbrook. This might be a year where Russell Westbrook doesn't make the Western Conference All-Star team. And that would, you know, people will be outraged about that because when he's healthy, Russell Westbrook, you could argue, is the best point guard in the Western Conference right there alongside Steph Curry. So the Thunder will have at least one, you would think possibly two all-stars on that reserve grouping. But you have to keep in mind, there's only so many spots. And like you said, Tim Duncan will likely get a slot. He's had a good season and representing the Spurs. It's just going to be challenging for those coaches. Somebody's going to get snubbed. And it's probably going to be, you know, the guys that are kind of like a Mike Conley who have had all-star caliber years. But, you know, you just got too many other talented guards and wings in the West to make room for those kinds of guys. It's going to be an interesting selection process.
Yes, it will. And you know what? When they do all that, we'll be back to talk about it. Joe, great stuff today. Thanks for being on the show.
Absolutely. Happy to be on, as always.
That was Joe Mullinax. You can find him at grizzlybearblues.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. It's time for our weekly New York Mets report, and joining me to do just that, please welcome from bloggingmets.com, Mark Berman is in the house. Mark, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to be here.
It's always fun to have you here. It's always fun to talk Mets baseball. And I got to tell you, lots of stuff written about the Mets. The Mets actually don't do much, so we have to riff off others. And one of the things that I saw out there was someone wrote from MetsPolice.com. I believe her name is Shannon Stark. That folks are putting all their eggs in Matt Harvey's basket. You think that's true to some extent? Because I think it is.
I think it's absolutely true. I mean, you look at the Mets. The Mets are basically the same team. Not basically, they're the same team as last year, except they added Michael Kadire. And that's not going to make any difference. But everyone's saying, oh, Matt Harvey's coming back. And while I think we all agree it's great Harvey's coming back and he's going to hopefully win some games, he alone is not going to make the Mets suddenly contenders. It's not like basketball where, you know, Michael Jordan comes back, you know, the Bulls are, you know, are champions. People are just counting on Harvey to carry this team on his back to the playoffs, and it doesn't happen in baseball. So, yeah, everyone is putting their eggs in his basket. It was a really interesting article.
It really was, and it's something that I've been saying for quite some time. You know, I don't expect anything from him. If he pitches and doesn't and remains healthy, then I'm happy. But I don't expect anything from him. He didn't win that many games when he was healthy.
Well, a lot of that wasn't his fault. I mean,
well, that's true, too. But the bottom line is what you say. I completely co-sign. One guy does not a championship Major League Baseball team make.
True.
Especially in this day and age when starting pitchers only pitch six innings anyway.
Right. And you know what? Everyone has a Matt Harvey on their team.
Just about, yeah. Except a lot of them have guys that are healthier.
True.
And we don't know what he's going to do yet. We really don't. And it's unfair to place all these expectations on him, even though people who don't even know him talk about how tough he is. And if anyone can do it, it's him and all this other stuff. It discounts all the other guys who've gone through the same process. Look at Steven Strasburg. Strasburg didn't light the world on fire. He still hasn't. They never come back the same. But we hope for is that he stays healthy. He can keep the Mets in baseball games and maybe, just maybe, one of those overpriced guys that shouldn't have been signed actually come along. And that's one thing that this young lady did say. She made mention of all eyes. And I'll read this to you. All eyes on third base. This guy can't hand in 8 home runs again. Matt Harvey is awesome but at best only plays every 5 days. David needs to hand in 155 good games. He got a free pass last year. He didn't get one from me. He's too important to the entire plan to not hand in a solid season. It'll be an interesting plot line to watch. What do you think about that?
Very true. I mean, Wright is the quote-unquote superstar in this team. He's making $20 million. He has to have a huge year for the Mets to do anything. And obviously, if he has a year like they had last year, Mets go nowhere. You know what? Even if he has a tremendous year, it doesn't mean they're going to go anywhere because if nobody else hits, they're not going to win.
But he's not the guy that's going to do that anyway. We don't look to him for him. to make that big hit because he doesn't. You know, he's a very nuts and bolts hitter. He makes good contact. He starts fires. He doesn't put them out often enough for $20 million a year. But let's be honest, the last couple seasons, since he signed that paycheck, since he signed that big contract, he hasn't done much. He hasn't lived up to that money.
No, he hasn't. And it's unfortunate. I mean, I'm a big Wright fan. We've talked about this. But I can't think of one big game-winning hit that he's gotten. I can't. Can you think of one?
Well, no. That's been my whole point the entire time. Right. I mean, he's not even exciting to watch. He's just a really good baseball player who had a very good year defensively. He really did. I thought he did a really good job from the defensive end, who just lost the spark in his bat. I don't know why he's done that. But it is what it is. You know, you can shorten the field all you want. But he couldn't hit one out of freaking the Little League park down in Williamsport last year.
Yeah, the one thing I noticed about Wright, when he first came up, I said, wow, this guy hits the ball hard every time he's up. And he just doesn't do that anymore. And I don't know. Obviously, he's getting a little older, but he's still a young, strong man. I don't know what it is, if it's bat speed or something, but he just doesn't hit the ball hard like he used to.
And it certainly isn't a lack of protection in the order, because he did get some of that last year.
A little,
but still, you know, this is a guy who should be able to hit. Rockaroo didn't get a lot of protection either. And he was fantastic. There's a lot of guys out there who didn't get a lot of protection. Ernie Banks.
God rest his soul.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about him this week. What an incredible tragedy. As Mets fans, the Cubs were our biggest rival, but he was still fantastic. I don't remember anyone ever booing him, but...
Yeah, can't boo him. He's just like, was just a great player, number one, and just like a happy guy, just a great ambassador for baseball. He was one of these guys you can't not like.
That's the guy you should put as the face of baseball.
Yeah.
Instead of David Wright. David Wright's the face of mediocre baseball. You know, you're talking about a Hall of Famer. You know, you're talking about apples and oranges. But Sports Illustrated, Mark, they graded Sandy Alderson. They gave him a D for this winter. What did you give him?
I gave him an F because he was terrible. But then I realized, no, an F's not really fair, because he did acquire Kadire. Which is something. So I think a D is appropriate. I mean, what did he do? He got Kadire, giving up a first round draft pick for some reason. He signed John Mayberry Jr. as a backup, which, you know, is perfectly fine. I have no problem with that. But that's it. That's all he did. I don't understand, if he really thinks the Mets are on the brink of winning, how he doesn't go that extra mile to do something. It's mind boggling. And I know money's a major issue. But if that was the case, he never should have signed Cologne last year for 2 years, because that contract is an albatross now. He didn't get rid of – he has too many pitchers, didn't get rid of any of them. So he has to get a failing grade, and I think D is appropriate.
I give him an F.
Okay. I could see that.
I really do, and it's not to disparage Sandy Alderson. I'm not a general manager, but I am a fantasy owner that's successful at it. I would never play against Billy Bean, though, because he's a real fantasy baseball owner with a freaking real team he plays fantasy baseball with and succeeds every year. I didn't think that he made the right moves at all. You know, I didn't think the Michael Kadire signing was a good signing. I don't think that is. I think that's ridiculous. John Mayberry Jr., you could have got him off the waiver wire. This is something that who cares about? Really, who cares about that? What the New York Mets needed, really needed, was someone young who can come up in the organization, because David Wright's 32 now, right? Or will be.
I think he's almost 31.
Well, he looks like he's 32. Maybe 33. Maybe 40. Who knows? Maybe he needs to visit Carlos Delgado and figure out how to hit 30 home runs a year. But honestly, Sandy Alderson did nothing.
Yeah.
Michael Kadire is an injury-prone outfielder. Now you've got three of them on the team that are injury-prone. He's a great hitter, but he's not healthy every day. You need health to win. As far as trading the pitchers, okay, I can understand why he didn't. You know, he still doesn't know what's going to happen with Harvey. He probably doesn't believe it either. You know, he's hedging his bets. And let's be honest, the James Shields not signing probably did hurt him a bit. But he could have done something. I would have thought he'd have gone after a shortstop, perhaps traded a couple guys for one. He has the talent to do it. He has the prospects now to do it. And for whatever reason, he didn't.
Yeah.
And that annoys me. So I gave him a failing grade for this winter.
Absolutely well deserved. I mean, he seems to be afraid to do things. I think he's just so cautious. He's afraid of making a wrong move. And that's no way to, you can't run a team that way.
Well, I don't think you can either, but he seems to do it. And well, when they're in fourth place again this year, or maybe even fifth, and that's the reason why. Don't ask why. We know why.
Yeah.
Anyway, great stuff today, Mark. Thanks for being on the show. We'll catch up with you next week, hopefully.
Okay, cool.
All right, that was Mark Berman, and you can find him over at bloggingmets.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return after these brief messages.
Riveting talk radio.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a very special offer. FanDuel will give you a 100% signing bonus of up to $200 with your first-time initial deposit. To receive this bonus, simply sign up at FanDuel using the promo code PhillyFlash and go win some cash with a flash at FanDuel.com.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you're looking for a great Portland Trail Blazers talk radio show, then look no further than the Blazers Edge podcast with Dave Deckard and Phil Nasons. For weekly hard-hitting commentary about your Trailblazers and fun NBA talk as well, please try the Blazers Edge podcast at BlazersEdge.com. Maximum Sports Channels is more than just a radio station. Phil's fantasy sports blog, the writer's Garrett, up-to-the-minute news feeds, great sports and entertainment commentary, Maximum Sports TV, including professional powerboat racing, and of course, the hottest music on the planet. Maximum Sports Channels. We're more than just a radio station.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Hi, we're Rob Folkett, and you're listening to Phil Nason Show.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. We're talking NBA All-Stars. We've already heard from Joe Mullinax and talked about the Western Conference. It's now time for the East. And joining me to talk about the Eastern Conference All-Stars, snubs, and who we think should be representing the Eastern Conference from PeachtreeHoops.com, Chris Willis is in the house. Chris, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Doing good, Phil. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, man. It's wonderful. We're doing this on Monday after our regular Hawks segment that turned out pretty good, I thought. Talking about the Hawks is easy, but talking about this Eastern Conference team is not. And I'll tell you why. You've got his guards. John Wall and Kyle Lowry were elected to start by the fans. And then the forwards. You've got Carmelo Anthony, Paul Gasol, and LeBron James. Now, let's look at the guards. John Wall and Kyle Lowry have both had fantastic seasons, but I think there's probably others that could have taken their role.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy Butler's had a phenomenal year, I think. He struggled a little bit of late as Chicago struggled a little bit, but I think he's a sure-in all-star. And I think you can't pay attention. I mean, you can't dismiss what Jeff Teague has done in Atlanta. I think he's deserving of an all-star spot given where the Hawks are in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I have those two. In fact, I voted for Jeff Teague and Jimmy Butler. I didn't vote for John Wall, and I didn't vote for Kyle Lowry. I also think Kyrie Irving should get a little say-so in this matter. I think he should have gotten more votes probably. Dwayne Wade is another one I thought. I don't know if he should have been a starter, but I'd like to see him on the team. He's like the second, number two in efficiency among all shooting guards in the NBA today, at least. And I like that. I like Butler, too. I really like Butler. But I guess you can't really kick against Wall and Lowry starting. But I guess the question is, do you think they should stick to roles? Because now you've got two point guards starting for the East. Should they have named a shooting guard maybe?
It's tough. You know, I've gone back and forth about the fan voting and that format and how it needs to be. I mean, typically you would like to have a shooting guard there. But, you know, it's tough. I don't know. You know, I don't know if you need to put that distinction there. That would definitely swap up, you know, how the results are tallied. And a lot of teams now are using more of a two-point guard attack at times too. So, you know, it's tough. I don't think any system is going to be perfect. But, yeah, I would have liked to have seen – I think Jimmy Butler, from what I've seen in the first half, you know, he's definitely deserving of that All-Star nod. And, you know, like I said, you can't dismiss what Dwayne Wade's been able to do. It's been a remarkable, efficient season, although Miami struggled a little bit.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Kyle Korver named.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, right now I've got three Hawks on the team. That's up from one, I think, from the last time me and you talked about it. But that's because the Hawks are up seven games in the Eastern Conference. You know, I never saw that happening. So, I mean, I think they're deserving of three. Right now I've got Kyle Korver on the outside looking in. But with Mike Budenholzer coaching the team, I would think that he would be one of the first players possibly up if there was a need for an injury replacement. So, but right now I've got Teague, Millsap, and Horford on the team. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, I think Millsap belongs there. I have Al Horford, too, on my backup list. But the forwards, Carmelo Anthony, Paul Gasol, and LeBron James. Now, I can't argue with the Paul Gasol selection. He's been a beast for Chicago. I can't argue with that one, really.
No, I agree with you. I like Paul Gasol. I've been a fan of his for a long time and was really, really hoping and got my hopes up during the summer there. There was a brief period there where, you know, the Hawks were supposedly talking to him. I thought he would have been a real good addition there in Atlanta. But, yeah, I mean, he's had a remarkable year. LeBron James is LeBron James. He's not had his typical MVP type of season, but you know he's probably the greatest player on the planet right now. Carmelo, you know I've got all the respect in the world for Carmelo. It's tough when you look and you see the Knicks struggling the way they are. You know they're going to get an All-Star and probably get a starter if his knee allows him to play. So, but you know I think there's also mention for Chris Bosh. I mean you look at his numbers; he's bounced back soundly with James' departure in Miami. You know, I think he's averaging over 20 points a game. He's missed a lot of games, though. But I think both he and Wade deserve mention there for the Heat.
Oh, I agree with you too. The other one that I would probably put in there in Gasol's place would be Paul Millsap. Millsap's also had a pretty good year. Carmelo Anthony does not deserve to be an all-star. He hasn't played like one. He doesn't act like one. He's just, it's a fan vote. And I'm not going to argue with the fans. Okay, he's a great scorer, but he does more talking than shooting nowadays. And I think this will be his last game of the season, the All-Star game. It's in New York. It's a cha-ching moment for him, which is he's all about the cha-ching. He's not about winning. That's obvious. And, well, it is what it is. But I did not vote for him, and I'm a Knicks fan. The only vote I would give Carmelo Anthony is a vote out of New York because he is horrid for that team. I would have rather seen Tobias Harris in there or even Luol Deng. Luol Deng's had a much better season this year. I think he's finally recovering from that spinal tap.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there's definitely some sentiment there that Anthony's getting in on his career work more so than what his season numbers are. I'll give you another name, the guy in Orlando, Nikola Vucevic. He's nearly averaging 20 and 10. Which is not something that occurs a lot nowadays. If the Magic had just a few more wins, you know, there's a good chance that he could have snuck his name into the discussion a little bit.
Oh, I have him on my list too. In fact, I have a man crush on him. I shouldn't say that out loud, but he's fantastic. He's a fantasy basketball dream come true. Philadelphia is still kicking themselves for letting him go. But it is what it is. And I've got Al Horford there. I've also got some votes for Kevin Love. Kevin Love is starting to find his groove. David Blatt's starting to give him the ball or get him in situations where he's most effective, and that's around by the top of the key at the three-point arc. And he's starting to hit there, and he rebounds well, too. He doesn't play defense. And an all-star game is where I really like watching Kevin Love play because I don't expect him to play defense. And there Kevin Love fits my plan of a basketball player at an exhibition game. But in a real game, no thank you. He wouldn't make my top 50. I need a defensive player. I take Paul Millsap over Kevin Love any day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, Cleveland struggled a lot early on, but they're starting to get it together now, and Love's starting to play well, and LeBron looks like MVP level LeBron again. So, you know, they're going to be heard from in the second half. That's for sure. We'll be interesting to see if Love can ride this hot streak though to the All-Star game, because it seems like he had a lot of ground to try to make up, early on.
Well, I agree. But one thing that just about everybody agrees on is the coach. Mike Budenholzer is the coach of the Eastern Conference, and he deserves it, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there's a coach in basketball that's done as good a job as Mike Budenholzer. Of course, I'm a little bit biased knowing that I watch the team daily, but Steve Kerr's done a phenomenal job in Golden State. But I think everybody knew that team was going to be good. The Hawks, people thought they'd be a playoff team. They didn't think they were a team that could possibly capture the number one seed. And right now they're running away with the Eastern Conference, seven games up on the Wizards. So I think it's a testament to his hard work and the way he's got his team to buy in. So I'm really excited to see him go to New York.
Especially after all the controversy from the summer. You know, they had to live down a lot of stuff over
there.
Yeah,
and I mean, that's true. They put the focus on the court. You know, that's the only thing they could really control. And he's done a great job of taking an unfortunate situation and circling the wagon, so to speak, and it's been an unbelievable run in Atlanta, one that we've probably never seen anything like. So,
and that's a fantastic thing, man. They're going to move the Braves out of the number one spot in the fans' hearts in Atlanta. That's for sure. They're playing great basketball. The All-Star game is going to be a blast. We'll talk more about that after the reserves are mentioned. Chris, great stuff today. Thank you so much for being on the show. We'll see you next week for your regular Atlanta Hawks report.
Always a pleasure, Phil. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you, Chris. That was Chris Willis. You can catch him over at peachtreehoops.com. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. we're closing up another amazing week and another amazing Friday sports talk show. It's time to start talking fantasy baseball because I'm freezing my butt off here in Akron. I want to talk about some warm weather sports like we've been doing all day. Fantasy baseball with Jason Walker. Jason's here from rotoadvice.com. Jason, what's up? How are you?
Phil, I'm doing good. Yeah, I'm trying to stay warm. I've had to venture up into the northern part of America. Now I'm trying to get back down to Florida, man. I want to warm up a little bit. So let's talk some baseball.
Fantasy baseball pitchers matter. It really does. And what I thought we would do today is talk about some of our National League pitchers, the big trades and the free agent signing with Max Scherzer, John Lester signed with the Cubs, and how that influences the standings for National League pitchers and how that influences National League only league teams. And I think it does. Now, I made a blog post over at my fantasy sports blog today, and I listed my top five National League pitchers. So I'm just going to run them off. And then we can get into what's up with that, where you disagree, whatever. How's that sound?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Let's do it.
All right, I got Clayton Kershaw, number one. Johnny Cueto, number two. Max Scherzer, number three. Madison Bumgarner, number four. And Steven Strasburg, number five. What do you think?
Obviously, what I'm seeing out there is that those guys that you're talking about, you know, in past years, you could easily go into a draft and, you'd see those guys go probably in the first couple rounds of a 12-team snake draft. You might be able to pluck a couple of maybe one of those in the third round. Well, that's not happening this year. I mean, all these guys are getting drafted really high, especially if you're looking at, NL-only or AL-only leagues. You know, pitchers are going earlier, and that's because they've been more reliable. The top-end pitchers like Kershaw, the guys you just mentioned, Bumgarner, Lester, Strasburg, these guys are all more reliable in terms of the counting stats they can give you and the qualitative stats, especially the qualitative stats around a guy like Kershaw, who's been incredible. We're seeing him going, you know, as early as the second pick overall, right after Mike Trout. So, I mean, in mixed leagues. So, I mean, it's Kershaw, and that's just kicking off a big starting pitcher's extravaganza. Guys are taking two starting pitchers in the first five rounds, where normally you maybe get one ace and then load up on hitters. Guys are taking what they feel like are the steadiest guys. And so the guys you just ran off, you know, it may be the second round. You might be sitting at the end of the second round and you might have taken Mike Trout with that first pick. You won't be getting those guys coming back around.
No, you won't. RotoWire was a part of, I guess they call it the Experts League, and it's USA Today and a few others. I think the draw was in Las Vegas where they did the draft, and they do it in January.
Yeah, the FSTA draft, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. And anyhow, four pitchers were taken in the first two rounds.
Yeah.
And these guys are experts. They know what they're talking about. Where do you put Clayton Kershaw? Where do you see him going? I see him going probably that he could go in the first round, really.
Well, yeah, that's what I say. He's going right after Trout in some drafts, and other ones, you know, he's lasting until the middle of the first round. But after, he's not getting past that right now, Phil. And the reason is he's pitching at an unprecedented level. It's 1968 Bob Gibson, 85 Dwight Gooden, 98-99 Pedro Martinez. He is dominating the pitching category. So as guys are looking to get something a little more solid in the first couple of rounds, and hitters have been flaky, especially in the middle of that first round, Kershaw is somebody that they're running to like a security blanket. He's unbelievable. His stats last year were off the charts. He was 14% swinging strike percentage. That's mind-boggling how many bats he's missing out there. You know, a 69% first strike, so he's going in very aggressive and getting guys to swing and miss, and that's what's driving his qualitative stats to a point where he's heads and tails above even guys like, you know, like you said, like Scherzer, who's switching over to the National League. Kershaw is still heads and tails above that, so people feel like they're getting a number one pick overall value with the fourth or fifth pick by taking Kershaw.
That's absolutely correct, too. I appreciate what you just said, too. How many bats he misses in the strike zone, that's incredible. His whip last year was less than one.
I know. And when you compare that around, it's still it's incredibly impressive, even compared to the peers, even as we move off of the steroid era and get into, you know, more of a 1980s style thing. It reminds a lot of Dwight Gooden in 85 when he was dominating and missing a lot of bets as well. Kershaw is even more profound than that right now.
He's incredible. He's for sure the top guy. You know, I always look for strikeouts too. I'm going to make sure. It just seems the last 3 or 4 years that teams with guys with 200 strikeouts or more are the winners. And you're going to have to grab one of these five guys quick, I think. I'm looking at probably the second or third round. I'm going to have to take a starting pitcher, which I don't mind. Johnny Cueto, you know what bothers me about him, even though I have him number two? His FIP is like 3.30. His xFIP is 3.21. But here's the thing, though. His batted balls in play, his BABIP, is 238, which is phenomenal. I mean, this guy, and he's going to be a 200-strikeout guy. That's why I have him at number two. A lot of people don't, and that's fair enough, I guess.
Yeah, I think with Johnny Cueto, I'm a big Cincinnati guy. I love the Reds. So I've watched a lot of Johnny Cueto. And when he pitches like last year, when he's totally healthy for a full season, he is one of the top two or three pitchers in the league. And that's because he's deceptive. You know, his swinging, he gets about 10%. He's right there in the ace category in terms of missing bats. His ground ball rate is usually incredible. He's getting guys to beat the ball into the ground, usually around 50%. It slipped a little bit last year, so that's why it's a little concerning, and that's why you saw that FIP come up a little bit last year. But the thing about Cueto is you can't project him to have a 200-inning season. He's just not durable enough. What you have to do is slot him for 150 innings pitched, find out where that ranks. That usually drops him to about the 10th best pitcher in mixed leagues, 10th or 11th, and then take what you can get there. People are going to shy away from him versus a guy like Bumgarner or, you know, a guy like maybe even, you know, John Lester, because they feel like maybe Cueto's not as dependable for a full slate of games. So if you take him, if you're projecting him for 150 or 160 innings, and then he gives you 200, well, that's a bonus. Otherwise, you really have to build in a little bit of risk with Johnny Cueto.
Last year, I got him at the tail end of the draft. I was very happy.
You scored. You scored and get me into that league this year.
Yeah, that was incredible. I couldn't believe it. But they were all afraid that he would get hurt. See, I don't worry about that. I know whatever he gives me is going to be good. I've got him ranked number two for that reason. I know what he's going to do when he's healthy. And I couched everything. If he stays healthy, I see no reason why he won't do the same kind of things in 2015. Max Scherzer, I've got him at number three. I don't think he's going to do so well in the National League. I think he's going to do all right. Obviously, he'd probably do great, but I got him at number three. I couldn't put him at number two.
Well, that's fair. I mean, I think what you're going to see with Scherzer is that strikeouts will still be there. You know, Max is probably second among the list of guys that we were talking about, second in missing bats behind Kershaw, which is no sin. He's still on the rise. He's one of the three pitchers on this list that is still on the rise, and with Kershaw being one of the other ones, and we'll get to the third guy here in a minute. But, you know, I think Scherzer is on my list. He's the second best NL starter. I think moving to, you know, Washington is definitely not going to hurt him. Nationals Park, very friendly to fly ball your pitchers. It was second to last in home run rate last year. You know, you still give up a lot of hits over there, but, you know, where Scherzer can get burned shouldn't be an impact for him there. It's even better than Wrigley. I mean, better than Wrigley for John Lester. Obviously better than Comerica, where he's coming from. So I am very bullish on him switching leagues this year, not just because he gets to face the pitcher, but that's nice. But he's a high strikeout guy. He's my pick to lead the league in strikeouts this year, and should be absolutely fantastic for that Nationals team.
Yeah, that makes sense. It does make sense. I still like Cueto better, but
I'm not going to argue with you. I love Cueto.
I know you do. I tell you what, this has been great stuff. Next time you come back, we'll talk more pitchers. And we'll just keep it going until we get through the whole thing.
That sounds good. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Jason. That was Jason Walker. You can find him over at rotoadvice.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's show. Until next time, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly,
ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.